Please stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a trailer for the podcast Flat Rock, an investigative-style podcast into one of Nashville, Tennessee's most tragic cold cases, the 1969 murder of 12-year-old Kathy Jones. Give it a listen. And again, we'd like to thank our friend Erica over at Southern Fried True Crime for her help with researching this and our last episodes. If you haven't heard her episode regarding Kathy Page's case, you need to. It's fantastic, as is all the work she does. Now on to the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Kathy Page's body was found in her car, which was nose down at a 45-degree angle in a ditch a little over 100 yards from her home in the early morning of Tuesday, May 14, 1991, in Vidor, Texas. Upon first sight, it looked like a tragic accident. But when Vidor Police Detective Ray Mosley began inspecting the scene, he noticed that several things didn't add up. It looked as if the vehicle had been slowly rolled into the ditch, and the inside of the car wasn't cluttered. Nothing had been jolted around the way he'd have expected from such a crash, particularly a crash that could have ended the 34-year-old mother's life. Kathy's purse, in fact, sat upright on the passenger side seat. Most telling, though, was the position of Kathy's body, which sat atop the seatbelt and leaned back against the driver's side seat instead of forward against the steering wheel or dashboard, and there were obvious signs that she'd been strangled. It was abundantly clear that Kathy Page had been killed elsewhere and that the perpetrator staged this scene in an attempt to make her death look like an accident. The attempt was incredibly poor. Detective Mosley knew the victim, and after the scene had been cleared, he headed to her home, where her estranged husband had been tasked to watch their 6-year-old and 11-year-old daughters while Kathy went out the previous night. The detective's visit began a series of inconsistent accounts, what appeared to have been attempted manipulations, strange actions, and seemingly blatant lies told and performed by Kathy's husband, Steve Page, both to the police and to members of Kathy's family, according to testimony they'd eventually provide a court. This is part two of the killing of Kathy Page. An interesting figure emerged the day Kathy Page was found, and whether his intentions were admirable or conspiratorial is anyone's guess, but one thing is certain, he became a part of a narrative that Steve Page, seemingly unable to keep his mouth shut for very long periods of time, began telling Kathy's family members, according to them. Roger Howell, a close friend of Steve Page, some say best friend, is reported to have been playing detective since day one. After Kathy's sister Diane called him at either 6:30 a.m. or 8 a.m. the day Kathy's body was found, depending on who you ask, Howell first visited Steve at Kathy's home. At another point that day, he called Kathy's friend Charlotte at work, she says, to tell her that Kathy had been found deceased. His sudden call took her by surprise, Charlotte later testified, because Howell didn't know where she worked, and it was her first day at that job. Steve Page presumably told him. Howell, at Kathy's sister Diane's request, visited Hofbräu Steakhouse in Beaumont, where Kathy worked as a server, to question her co-workers about who Kathy had been dating. It's unclear what information, if any, came from Hal's little investigation, but Steve later claimed that rumors of Kathy's cocaine habit came from Hal's questioning of her co-workers. Rumors that, allegedly, Steve presented to family members in a way that resembled truths when he told them that she'd probably wound up in the ditch as a result of being drunk, coked up, and high on Valium. She missed the turnoff onto West Boulevard Street toward her home. Several of Kathy's family members testified to Steve as saying, probably breaking her neck in the process. The following day, Wednesday, May 15th, Kathy's sister, Sherry, claims to have smelled a strong chemical smell in Kathy's home and to have witnessed oscillating fans pointing toward freshly cleaned carpet. When asked what was going on, Sherry said, Steve told her he'd spilled some grease on the carpet and had to clean it. Both Steve and Roger Howell were there when Sherry arrived, she said, and at some point they, Roger carrying a manila envelope, entered the bedroom that Kathy shared with her 6-year-old daughter, Monica, and shut the door, Sherry later testified. It was only a few seconds, but after they came out, they headed to 11-year-old Aaron's room, where they stayed for what Sherry described as a few minutes. When they emerged from Aaron's room, Sherry said that the manila envelope Howell carried was bulky and made a metallic clanking sound. Steve Page and Roger Howell later told a court that it was a paper bag full of candy that Howell brought over, not a manila envelope with clunky, bulky metallic objects inside. It later came out in court testimony that Steve told the police that Kathy's watches were missing when they inquired about the contents of her jewelry box. Perhaps the strangest account of Roger Howell came from Kathy's brother, Jimmy Fulton. According to Jimmy, he, Steve, and Roger were at the funeral home on Thursday, May 16, 1991, the day before Kathy was to be laid to rest, and Roger asked to see her body. Jimmy took him to Kathy's body, and Roger requested that Jimmy leave the room so that he could be alone with Kathy. Jimmy wasn't having that, but he did turn his back to Roger Howell, he said, though he looked over his shoulder, and Jimmy claims to have seen Roger touch Kathy's face and body and witnessed him make a sketch of her on paper. Roger Howell denies those claims. Dorothy Fulton, Kathy's mother, claimed to have seen Steve burning something at the house on Saturday, May 18, 1991, the day after her daughter's funeral. It should be pointed out, though, that burning trash and debris in this and countless other small towns and rural areas is extremely common. Nearly every house in Vidor and the clump of small towns around it have burn piles. The grease spill on the carpet was claimed by Steve to have happened on that Saturday as well, and several members of his family, his mother and his sister among them, backed Steve's recollection up. Even Aaron, Kathy and Steve's daughter, who was 11 years old at the time, claims to have seen the spill happen the day her father claimed. The estranged couple's daughter Monica, however, said no grease was ever spilt and no carpet ever cleaned. Steve testified that he spilled the grease in the same spot he and Kathy had sex the night before her body was found, and that he used a machine he owned to clean it. However, workers at an establishment that rented out carpet cleaners identified Steve as having rented one there. Steve also denied telling anyone that Kathy had cut herself while shaving her legs on the carpet. Again, no one ever reported to have seen blood on the carpet. The following day, Sunday, May 19, 1991, Dorothy, Kathy's mother, came to the house and says she saw Steve's sister-in-law cleaning the carpet. Kathy's brother, Jimmy, was there too, and he claims to have seen several of Steve's family members, along with Steve, cleaning one area of the carpet, even though they claimed that a jar of grease had fallen and rolled, spilling a trail of grease for 6 to 8 feet. And he wondered why Steve didn't just carry the grease out the side door from the kitchen, where his entire trip to do so would have been over linoleum. Kathy's autopsy report had been viewed by the family at this point, and Jimmy said the realization that Steve Page killed Kathy hit him when he witnessed the carpet cleaning. The autopsy of Kathy Page's body was performed in two separate sessions, both at 9:30 a.m., the first one the day she was found and is estimated to have died, Tuesday, May 14, 1991, and the other performed the following day, Wednesday, May 15, 1991, after Harris County Medical Examiner Dr. Eduardo Baez was asked to be present to provide his expertise. Initial inspection of Kathy's body, while her body was still clothed, indicated that she'd been dragged, as a blade of grass was found on the bottom back of her jeans. Transfer blood stains were found under her clothing, on her bra, underwear, and on her body, none outside of the clothing, which means that the clothes she wore when her body was discovered had been put on after at least some of her injuries, probably all, were inflicted. There was blood in Kathy's hair, too, on the back of her head. Her nose was broken. There were what appeared to be bite marks on her body, though it is unclear from what we have where on her body they were found. Petechial hemorrhaging was present in Kathy's eyes. Her hyoid bone was fractured and displaced inward, her neck badly bruised. She'd been violently strangled to death by the killer's left hand, the medical examiner determined. Kathy either had sex with or was sexually assaulted by an individual who'd had a vasectomy, most likely. The man Kathy visited the night before her murder at a motel in Beaumont, her new love interest, who was never named, was cleared by police, at least in part, presumably, because of this fact. Kathy's estranged husband, Steve Page, however, had undergone a vasectomy operation earlier that year. Relations between Steve Page and the Fulton family, as can be imagined, continued to deteriorate as time went on. Reports by the Fultons about Steve's strange behavior continued, and allegations brought on by Steve against the Fultons heated up too. He claimed that Kathy's sister, Sherry, made threats against his children, and Kathy and Steve's daughter, Erin, claimed that Sherry put a bomb threat letter, written anonymously, on her school bus. Steve claimed that the intense scrutiny of him by the Fulton family is what led him to desecrate the grave of his wife. His frustrations with them led to uncontrollable anger, he said. Kathy's sisters claim that Steve continually drove past and around their homes. At some point in the summer, Kathy's watches surfaced in her daughter Erin's closet, according to Steve, though Erin later testified that she didn't remember her father telling her that he found them there. Vidor Police Detective Ray Mosley acknowledged that Steve Page was the number one suspect in Kathy's murder just 2 days after her death, but twice the grand jury declined to indict him on that charge due to lack of evidence. The department was heavily criticized by the Fultons and by others in the community for not taking the proper steps and procedures to ensure that all evidence available was collected. They'd cleared the scene where Kathy was found fast. But the Vidor Police Department disagreed, saying that the manner of Kathy's death, a strangulation, left scant traces and clues to work from. Worse still, The Orange County District Attorney refused to get on board with a warrant to search Steve's home, providing him, assuming he was guilty of killing Kathy, plenty of time to dispose of anything he needed to and clean what was thought to be the crime scene. The video camera officers used at the scene when Kathy was found mysteriously malfunctioned. These were the seeds that would eventually grow into suspicion that law enforcement and the Orange County judicial system were complicit in a conspiracy that helped Steve Page get away with killing his wife. Kathy's father, James Fulton, however, wasn't going to sit back and let his daughter's killer or the police who he thought botched the investigation get away with it that easy. If the unthinkable happens, are you prepared? Insurance companies these days often refuse coverage for some of the unexpected costs of medical emergencies, leaving you holding an outrageous bill that you most likely weren't prepared for. There is a way, though, to safeguard your health and protect your finances from such an event with an Air Medcare Network membership. For as low as $65 per year, an Air Medcare Network membership can provide you or a family member with emergency medical transport to the nearest appropriate hospital with no out-of-pocket expenses. You heard me right. Members never pay a dime to be transported by an Air Medcare Network provider. They are the largest group of emergent transport providers in the world. So, join the 3 million Air Medcare Network members and secure your peace of mind today. Right now, Air Medcare Network is offering Gone Cold listeners a $10 Visa gift card with a one-year membership. Just visit airmedcarenetwork.com/Texas and use offer code Texas. You can also check our show notes for the link. Again, visit airmedcarenetwork.com/Texas, use offer code Texas, and get a $10 Visa gift card when you sign up for a one-year membership. Upon the failure of the grand jury to indict the man he thought was responsible for his daughter's death, James Fulton made three signs that he erected alongside Interstate 10 at the edge of Vidor toward Beaumont. After about 6 months, I seen the police department wasn't going to do nothing, Mr. Fulton told the television show Cold Justice. The original billboards Kathy's father put up were vague enough that the meaning most likely escaped the motorist simply passing through, but residents of Vidor and the surrounding towns got the gist. And both the Vidor police and Steve Page knew damn well what they were all about. The original signs read, "Vidor police botched up the case, waiting for confession," and "This could happen to you," placed one after the other in that order. James Fulton's decision to erect the billboards isn't a common move by a grieving family member, but his belief that his daughter was beaten and raped before being violently strangled to death was too much. He had to do something. These three signs were only the first in a series that remain to this day, almost 30 years later. And the billboard's message intensified through the years, presumably to match the growing intensity of James Fulton's grief and frustration. "I believe my daughter was raped while she was being strangled to death. Vidor police botched up the case," and "This could happen to you," read another set. Eventually, the three signs turned into one much larger billboard. "This is Orange County, City of Vidor. Here you get by with brutally murdering a woman," one read. And another, along with a photo of both Steve and Kathy, read, "Steve Page brutally murdered his wife in 1991. Vidor PD does not want to solve this case. I believe they took a bribe. The Attorney General should investigate." And yet another version of the billboard, this one featuring only Steve Page's photo, mentions the fact that Steve was found responsible for Kathy's murder in a civil trial, and that the ruling was later upheld upon Steve's appeal. In August of 1994, more than 3 years after Kathy Page was strangled to death, and most likely sexually assaulted, Vidor Police Detective Ray Mosley got word that Steve Page was about to move to Huntsville, Alabama, with his and Kathy's daughters, Monica and Aaron. Mosley acted fast and filed another affidavit to obtain a search warrant for the home. Finally, the warrant was signed off on, but ultimately, the use of luminol to test for blood on and under the house's carpet provided inconclusive results, as did other tests that weren't elaborated on, though one was a backyard soil test. Steve Page and his daughters moved away to Alabama, but less than a year later, in June of 1995, he'd travel back to the area when James and Dorothy Fulton sought to block his access to the $50,000 life insurance policy on Kathy by filing a wrongful death lawsuit against him. Because Kathy's sister, Sherry, testified that she'd asked Steve why he wouldn't take a polygraph test, and that he responded by saying that the police were trying to frame him when she was instructed not to bring it up in court, Page's attorney moved for a mistrial, and it was granted. In November of 1995, Steve Page was back in court for the Fulton family's second attempt to stop him from collecting Kathy's insurance money. After both sides were presented and the jury deliberated for 4 hours, the trial ended in a hung jury. Almost 4 years later, however, in October of 1999, after having collected the insurance policy on his wife, James and Dorothy Fulton were ready to try again, this time suing Steve Page for $50,000. Steve and Kathy's daughter, Erin, testified on her father's behalf, telling the court that she never saw or heard her parents argue, and that her father never slept on the couch. Sherry, Kathy's sister, who claims to have witnessed both of those things, spoke to the court about also witnessing Steve's abuse of Kathy, as well as his odd behavior after her death, such as telling the family that she had a cocaine habit and that she'd probably been high, wrecked the car, and probably broke her neck. Steve admitted in court that he lied when he said he knew Kathy used cocaine. He said that he was going off rumors. The medical examiner's determination that Kathy Page had been strangled by an individual using their left hand, though, provided interesting testimony in the third civil trial. Steve Page was right-handed, something his entire family testified to, and his attorney argued that this excluded his client as the perpetrator of the slaying. It seems like an obvious fact that it is completely possible and arguably totally plausible for a person to strangle another individual with their disfavored hand, particularly if that person's preferred hand is needed for a tougher job. But that doesn't seem to be argued against Steve in the trial, oddly. What the Fulton's attorney does do to combat the right-hand-left-hand issue is provide witnesses to testify that Steve Page is ambidextrous. A man testified that when he rented property from Steve, he witnessed Steve sign the agreement with his left hand, and Kathy's sister Jan testified that Steve used his left hand to make shots while playing basketball all the time. In the end, after considerable testimony that didn't paint Steve Page in the best light, virtually all the accounts of Steve's behavior and story inconsistencies immediately following Kathy's murder, his unwillingness to cooperate with police, the grease spill and subsequent cleaning of the carpets, the fact that Kathy's killer had a vasectomy, as did he, Steve Jones was found responsible for the murder of Lucille Catherine Page, Kathy, and ordered by a judge to pay $261,780 and 82 cents to James and Dorothy Fulton. In 1999, too, Orange County Crime Stoppers offered an increased reward of $10,000 for information leading to the indictment of the individual responsible for Kathy Page's slaying. It was 10 times the amount that the county had ever offered. After years of James Fulton's billboards describing the Vidor police as inept if not corrupt, and advertising that you can get away with murder in the county, they wanted it solved more than ever. Steve appealed the civil trial's outcome in 2000, but the court upheld the jury's decision. The appeal opinion, when you get past the rather dry discussions of precedents, provides that the jury could have reasonably believed that a clear motive, ability, and opportunity for Steve Page to murder his wife, Kathy Page. The court agreed that the couple had heated arguments and that testimony was sufficient to come to the reasonable conclusion that Steve did indeed act out physically against Kathy. The impending divorce, Steve's mention of Kathy's love interest even before he claimed to have known, and, the decision says, circumstantial evidence existed that Steve followed Kathy to Beaumont that night, were all listed as motives, suggesting that it all built up and Steve at some point flew into a fit of rage and killed his estranged wife. The court said that since Kathy appeared to have gone through her nightly routine of removing her makeup and jewelry, both of which she still wore after leaving her new boyfriend's motel in Beaumont, she was reclothed, and that since the car was found pointing away from her home, all evidence pointed to Kathy having made it to the house. The jury also didn't believe that Kathy had sex with Steve just before leaving to meet a love interest, and the appeals court found that decision to be sound as well. Steve Page's lies, bizarre interactions with family members, and desecration of Kathy's grave, of course, were all found to be substantial circumstantial evidence that he was responsible for the killing, the court upheld. In 2017, a movie titled Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri was released in theaters. The film drew its inspiration from the signs Kathy's father, James Fulton, erected in Vidor along Interstate 10, and Kathy's case received a surge of national attention as a result. In 2018, former Harris County prosecutor Kelly Siegler's television show, Cold Justice, came to Vidor and investigated Kathy's case and determined that law enforcement had failed Kathy and her family, and that Steve Page most likely murdered his wife. The Vidor Police Department told British tabloid The Daily Mail in 2018 that Kathy's murder was the only cold case they have. Chief Rod Carroll told the Daily Mail that he believes someone besides Steve Page knows the truth, that he told someone else, and it will be a matter of the conscience of that individual or those individuals, and that is what will move the case forward. He also told the Houston Chronicle in October 2018 that they would present their updated file to the district attorney for consideration. The Texas Rangers and even the Federal Bureau of Investigations provided assistance to the Vidor Police Department here and there since Kathy was killed in 1991, but obviously to no avail. Though the district attorney commented in 2018 that they'd take it to a grand jury soon, Steve Page has still never been found criminally responsible, guilty, of the murder of Kathy Page, and he continues to maintain his innocence. James Fulton's relentless billboard campaign against Steve Page, and, presumably, the uncertainty of whether or not their father murdered their mother, weighed heavily on Steve and Kathy Page's two daughters, Erin and Monica. Aaron and Monica became estranged from the Fulton family, and Aaron remains so to this day. Driving past the billboards on a regular basis was likely unimaginably confusing to them. Not only was their mother taken from them, their entire family, their entire worlds were ripped apart. Tragedy befell the sisters again in 2011, when Monica died as the result of an overdose of painkillers at only 27 years old. If you have any information about the murder of Lucille Catherine Page, please call the Vidard Police Department at 409-769-4561. Thanks to Erica over at Southern Fried True Crime for her help with researching Kathy's case. And don't forget to stick around for a trailer for the podcast Flat Rock. The Orange Leader, Port Arthur News, DailyMail.com, the television programs Cold Justice and Unsolved Mysteries, The Examiner, The Beaumont Enterprise, The Houston Chronicle, the website texasbillboard.blogspot.com, and court documents were used as sources for this episode. If you'd like to support Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/Gone Cold Podcast. There are several varying donation levels to choose from there, with perks to go along with each, including ad-free listening at all levels. Donations help us cover the costs associated with research and production, and we can't thank y'all enough for your support. Thanks for listening, y'all.
One time a detective says she never had a chance. What did he mean by that? What do they know that the public don't know?
In 1969, Kathy Jones was brutally murdered on her way to a Nashville skating rink. The public wasn't told about one of the strongest suspects in her case, and I want to know more. Join me for Flat Rock, a cold case podcast where I'll be taking a deep dive into Kathy's murder and bringing you with me.
Someone out there still alive today, someone knows something.